There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Oh, I think they've opened a branch of Greg's outside just in case anybody gets desperate now.
So
if you have a really bad bait, you can just buy a sausage roll and put that in.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Bakedown Podcast. It's Botanicals Week, which is a very interesting week. We've had one before, and we have another one. So let's talk about Botanicals Week. Jane, you did a Botanicals Week. I think you're the only year to have done a Botanicals Week. So was it quite nice to see another Botanicals Week, or was it quite painful to relive those memories?
Oh, I think it was my worst week in the tent, so it was quite painful. It was, but in many ways. normally filming, I don't think I'm giving any secrets away here, and I do apologise if I am. Please don't call me in to smack me on the wrists for giving away secrets again. But we had filmed at the weekend, whatever the week before that was. So we had filmed Saturday and Sunday, come home, and then we were back down on Tuesday night to film Wednesday, Thursday. So we were all exhausted. We'd barely got time to unpack our cases and wash our undies before we were packing it all up again. No time for practice, no time for anything, barely time to sort of stroke the dog and kiss the husband, or the other way around, whichever way you want to. So we weren't too bad on filming the first day. I mean, it was, I can't remember what the technical was. It could have been, was it Sabaran? No, probably not. But it was definitely, we had to do a citrus meringue pie, which was fine. Mine was fine. I did a classic French meringue. A lot of people were really struggling with their meringues. It was, if I remember, a really wet day. And moisture is not good with meringue, apparently. But then the next day, we had to do two or three layered cakes, floral cakes. I chose to do a floral chocolate collar of mine and made the complete classic error of baking three deep cakes instead of, as I always say, shallow cakes that cool really quickly. I mean, we just all had disasters. So many people were in tears. So many people, because we were so tired. It was all going horribly wrong. I remember glancing over to Selassie, and all I could see, he'd had a disaster, but all I could see was a cloud of icing sugar. He made, honestly, he was on the same side of the tent as me, and we were both wearing floral shirts. And that was the day when I went out of the tent, having had a completely horrendous bake with my chocolate collars. And we caught Paul having a cigarette. And somebody went, "Oh, Paul, you're smoking. That's why you do." And he looked at me and he went, I just had to get the taste of your disgusting cake out of my mouth.
Oh!
I think he was probably joking, but...
I hope so.
Well, I don't know, but we're mic'd up the whole time, so everybody hears, the producers hear it and everything, and the home economist did come up to me afterwards and say, your cake was fine, we tasted your cake, it was fine, don't worry about it. Yeah, it was not, I think, not all of our finest hours, to be fair. It still pains me to think about it.
Yeah, they did seem to be quite specific about it, didn't they? It was like, yes. Oh,
why is that excellent, sir?
This cake tastes too lemony. Oh, right, of course, lemons aren't really botanical, are they? They're not plant, are they? No, bizarre.
Excellent. So the pain of Botanicals Week was really there as you were watching this episode. So, yes, Botanicals Week. Jane's pain of Botanicals Week. Howard and Dan are also joining us today to chat about Botanicals Week. What did you boys think of this week?
Well, actually, before we start, can I ask, has anyone with the power of Google, because I haven't bothered, looked at what botanicals actually means? Because surely it just means plants, right? No?
It is relating to botany, which is in general very loosely the study of plants, yes.
Yes, well, you stick botanicals in your gin, don't you?
Yeah. It is definitely, it's a bit of a picky thing, isn't it?
Well, I think, to me, when you say botanicals, you think of those floral perfumey notes.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, things like basil or bay or, you know, other leafy herbs and then maybe, you know, rose water and things like that. But I'm not really sure I know what botanicals means. So, yeah, I was hoping someone else might enlighten me.
Well, dear old Google, a botanical ingredient is a component of a cosmetic or personal care, and I assume also food, from plants, brackets, herbs, roots, flowers, fruits, leaves, or seeds. So the whole lemon thing was, for the, if you're referring to the first challenge, they were told to celebrate spice. So if the lemon overpowered the spice, then although lemon is a botanical, it was the wrong botanical for that challenge. So, I think you can be very loose about the whole botanicals thing, really.
So, yes, I feel this is going to be a contentious issue all the way through the episode about botanicals. This is possibly something that came up last time Botanicals Week was on the Bake Off. It can be a little bit of a loose term. But we will crack on and we will start with the signature challenge. So before we get into this, we should mention what we are going to be doing for our Bake Along Mystery class for Botanicals Week. And Dan, this is going to be your week.
Mm.
So before we get into the signature, would you like to tell us what we're going to be doing for Botanicals Week?
Well, I couldn't really make up my mind, so we're going to be doing something that's sort of halfway between the signature and the technical. So we're going to be making a kind of like a cinnamon roll or a Chelsea bun, something in that style, whichever you want to call it. And we're going to be flavouring that with lemon and thyme, give it a nice sort of fresh floral flavour. And try saying that a few times quickly. And while we're waiting, we're going to be making a rose and pistachio fudge, which is one of my favourite things. I was hoping we could make also Turkish delight in the time, but I don't think that's possible. So I think we're just going to go with the sort of lemon and thyme rolls and the rose and pistachio fudge. So that'll be something I'm very much looking forward to because I love rose and pistachio fudge.
Yeah.
Do you?
That sounds absolutely fantastic. Jane doesn't think so. Okay.
I don't like fudge, so I'm not a good judge. I'm not a fudge lover. So
okay.
I love pistachio and I don't mind rose.
Jane, when I finally write my cookbook one day, I shall have your review on the cover which says it's all right.
That's going to be the name of the cookbook. But if that all sounds very up your alley, then do come and join us for Botanicals Week. I mean, Dan, I think you've ticked all the boxes there. We've got seeds, we've got flowers, we've got fruits and herbs. So you've literally ticked all of the botanicals boxes there.
I hope so.
So if you fancy coming to that class, you can join Dan and our fantastic host, Emily, who will be taking that class on Sunday, the 5th of November. So you can join Dan and Emily for Botanicals Week, making some fantastic lemon and thyme Chelsea Buns. And don't forget, if you are booking any class with us at Bake with a Legend, you can use the code PODCAST to get 10% off your booking. So, the signature challenge for this episode was 12 spiced buns, and they had 2 hours and 45 minutes. And I believe, as Jane said just a bit earlier on, spice needed to be the hero flavour, the main flavour. It needed to be the thing that really did shine through. So do we think everybody hit that brief? Howard, what did you think of this signature challenge?
I thought it was lovely, for a start, to see bread making a reappearance in a non-bread week. So I think it's nice that we're getting a bit of variety. It's not cakes every week. Which is lovely. I thought it was tricky to do. It is tricky to come up with something original that still sounds kind of appetizing. So cinnamon buns are lovely, but trying to do something that's a little bit different, and Dan's obviously come up with a great idea for his, but there were one or two that I just thought, not sure about that. Thought Dan, Baker Dan, well, they're both bakers, aren't they, Dan? not our Dan. Dan on the
I'm
show.
I'm as confused as you are.
Our Dan's not a baker.
I thought that sounded lovely, and I did like the sort of fresh figs on top. I thought they looked very nice.
Prue liked the sound of those as well.
Yeah.
I love saffron in a sweet bake. I make a nice cake with saffron, as long as it's not too strong. And I love the fact that it would colour the dough slightly. And I just didn't see why you're adding saffron and star anise, which is such a strong flavour. I suppose you have to be quite careful with it. And cinnamon. I think I would have stayed with made the saffron the hero flavour and let the orange. I'm not even sure I'd have bothered to put lemon in as well. Just orange and saffron are a combination made in heaven. But I love the idea of the figs on it. So I think Dan threw too many flavours at it for my taste, to be honest. I would have stuck with the saffron.
I quite like the sound of Tasha's, but the putting in the mulled wine did remind me rather of Flo's lovely mulled wine and cheesecake. Or what was it?
Roquefort and mulled wine. I was in the tent when she made that. I was in the tent. Can I let you into a secret? I really apologise, Flo, for this. I really, really, really apologise for this, but it's too good a story. So it was Christmas Bake Off 2018, which I won instantly. I've got a lovely plate to bring it.
Here we go.
So... Flo, I love Flo dearly. She was such a character. So there was Flo, Andrew, Liam and myself in the tent making this thing. She put a whole bottle of mulled wine in. I mean, it was actually mulled wine. She just didn't use mulled wine flavour. She actually used mulled wine. A whole bottle went into this thing. And then she decided she was going to sandwich it together with the Roquefort buttercream. I don't mind a little bit of savoury and sweet together. But Roquefort, oh my God, it's such a strong flavour. Anyway, so we then all go outside... waiting for the result, and this pretend snow everywhere, and we're waiting with our family and friends, and we all get to taste a bit of everybody's. So I went over to Flo and got some of her cake and tasted it and thought, oh my God, it's absolutely gross. And I took it back to we were all on barrels. I took it back to my group of friends and family. Now, my friend Harriet, she loves cake. Absolutely loves cake. And before I could say anything, she said, oh, you've got some of Flo's. Great, she said, I've tasted Liam, I've tasted yours, I haven't tasted Flo's. And she got this piece of cake and stuck a whole piece in her mouth and couldn't swallow it. And we were all mic'd up and the cameras were everywhere. And she couldn't even spit it out because it would have looked so awful. And she still holds it against me. She said, I didn't warn her. But I couldn't warn her because she stuffed this cake in her gob too quickly. My goodness me, her face was an absolute picture. And yes, dear listener, that cake was as bad as Paul made it out to be. It was just, sorry, Flo, it didn't work. It didn't
work.
Oh, that was mean of me, wasn't it?
Well, sometimes you take risks and they don't work, but it is a great story. Oh, goodness me.
Luckily, Tasha did a bit better than that.
Yes, she did.
No Rock 4 in sight.
No.
No. Although, did she serve the whole thing upside down? Is that what she did? So she sort of had the nice flat bottom and then served it the other way up?
I don't think so.
No?
I thought...
Oh, did I imagine that?
She did definitely put something in the base so that it sucked up, didn't she? She put a sort of, like a syrupy mulled wine stuff at the bottom. I think it was just to make it yummy at the bottom as well as the top, I thought.
Oh, is that what it was? That. Okay.
I thought so.
I thought she did like a mulled wine, almost like a frosting as well, didn't she, over the top? So,
oh,
yeah.
But it was an interesting look. Can I ask, though, and this is one thing, didn't she put some stars on the top?
Yes.
Did she make those?
No, don't think so.
Well, we weren't ever allowed to take in any home sort of pre-made decorations. That wasn't allowed. And I just thought, where did she suddenly get these stars from? I didn't see her make those.
Oh, I think they've opened a branch of Greg's outside just in case anybody gets desperate now. So if you have a really bad bait, you can just buy a sausage roll and put that down.
Yeah. Oh, Howard. Oh, goodness me. What did you guys think of Matty's hot cross buns? Do you think they were too simple?
Maybe, but they were probably delicious. So I don't know that I care. I think there's a line, and I think, you know, we all want to, we all sometimes feel the need to reinvent the wheel when we're on Bake Off. And, you know, was a simple hot cross bun too simple? It didn't quite match the challenge completely, but I'm sure it would have been delicious, so I'd have been a bit more forgiving. Why am I being forgiving to Matty? Why is that happening?
You like Matty. You like Matty.
Well, maybe that's why. Yeah. Maybe I wouldn't be so forgiving with anyone else. I don't know.
I think there was a time, wasn't there, when there was a bit of a kind of confusion between what's a signature bake and what's a showstopper. So we went through a few series where the signature bakes really had that kind of wow factor as well, and people were trying to put lots into decoration and things, you know, and so on. And I think, as we've said before, this series has gone back a little bit to kind of traditional skills. So to me, there's nothing wrong with a signature, actually. Should still look appetizing, but it doesn't have to have the kind of real wow factor that a showstopper has.
That's a fair comment, yeah. And I think Paul and Prue just wanted a bit more fruit and a bit more ginger, so everything was fine. They just wanted a little bit more taste in it, but that's fair enough.
It was underproved, they said. It was too dense as well. And I think if you are going to do something, I mean, I thought quite a lot of them were simple. There's nothing complicated about a sort of cinnamon roll type thing. But I think if you are going to do something that is so obviously just a spice bun, it has to be perfect. And I think that he just let him down a bit. I have to say, between you and me, and please don't tell anybody, Paul's hot cross bun recipe doesn't work for me in his book. I failed two or three times and then thought, blimey, I can bake. I don't need to follow Paul's recipe. But yes, his recipe doesn't work. Well, not for me anyway.
I'm sure he'll be devastated.
He'll be absolutely devastated, yes.
He'll be on the phone to you in the morning. Yeah.
Well, we had a couple more bakers doing a slightly different design with their buns. Saku did some little knots, which looked really good. Christy did some little rolls within hers that looked really nice. And Dana had a go as well at the knots and the shaping. So what did we think of those ones?
I like Dana's shaping. I thought that was pretty. I thought it was a struggle. A lot of them had the struggle with the consistency, didn't they? And I think if I was Dana, didn't she do hers in a mould as well? She did them and knotted them and then put them in a mould.
I think so.
And I think Saku made a slightly better job of it by doing it more of a freehand way. And I just thought, if there's a bit of inconsistency in that, then it's just sort of generally bigger or smaller. Whereas if you do it in a mould, you know, the muffin top is very real. You're going to end up with that big sort of overhang, which I think Dana struggled with. So I definitely preferred Saku's, but I did like the fact that some of them tried to do something other than a roll. I wouldn't say that a cinnamon roll style is easy, per se, but it's a lot more controllable than some of the more freeform shapes. But I liked Saku's. I thought Saku's was really, really lovely.
Mm, they did. I thought they looked really pretty. And she had some nice spice flavours in there. This was Saku's Swedish Sri Lankan meld of flavours. So a Swedish style bun, but with cinnamon and cardamom from Sri Lanka. So a nice meld there. I thought Christie's sounded really nice with the pecans and maple syrup. That sounded lovely. And the judges really liked hers as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, she said she can't go foraging in London. I don't know why foraging had to rear its, ugly head. There's nothing ugly about foraging. You can go foraging in London. You just have to wash everything because there's an awful lot of dogs peeing on things in London. So it's always particularly attractive.
I don't think dumpster diving is the same as foraging. It's a slightly different thing.
No, you're probably right.
Don't let Dan fool you. There are green spaces in London, dear listeners.
Oh, he lives very close to a very nice green space.
So. Exactly. Go find some blackberries, Dan. Go foraging for blackberries this half term.
Oh, they're all gone now. All gone.
Do you know, actually, I live right near Battersea Park, and when it comes to Christmas, I do go in. I probably shouldn't say this on the podcast. I do go in with my little scissors in my pocket and take some holly off the bushes. So that I've got holly for my Christmas pudding. I don't know if you're allowed to do that, and I'm afraid to look it up. You're probably not allowed to do it. But yeah, if you spot me in Battersea Park looking a little bit suspicious around Christmas time, you know what I'm up to.
There you go. That's a form of foraging. You get into the spirit, Dan. There we go.
There are foraging rules, apparently. You have to get permission. From the landowner, apparently. Things like that. So a friend of mine who's big into things like that. Yeah, if you do have to get permission, but if you're surreptitious and careful, Dan, there's nothing wrong with a bit of
I might be all right.
I'm eyeing up some berries as we speak.
Well, we haven't mentioned Josh's buns.
Oh, no.
He made a cinnamon and blueberry bun with a lemon curd centre. He's dried and fresh blueberries. I thought his little cartoon swirls, I think Paul described them as cartoon eye swirls, I thought they were really sweet. I thought it was quite a nice way to decorate it, made them look quite different.
It looked like that Pokemon. I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, I know which one you mean.
You know, the one with the swirly belly?
Yeah.
Yeah, looked like that.
I don't know. I never got into Pokemon.
Well,
I liked the idea of the lemon curd in the centre.
Yes,
as well.
I did too. Yeah, I thought it was a nice idea. Yeah.
Now, what does the lemon curd go in? Is it a bath bun or something that has the lemon curd in it? Or what's it? What is it? I don't, one of them traditionally has a lemon. Is it a Belgian bun that has a lemon curd in it? Maybe.
Oh, I don't know. Actually, I can't remember.
Yeah, but it's quite traditional to use a curd. Yeah, and it was lovely. But the blueberry was never going to carry, was it?
No.
No. And that was something that didn't really. I'm not going to say didn't work because, well, you know, is it fair to say that if blueberries aren't meant to be the main flavour, it doesn't matter that they're not the main flavour? Surely that's the point of a spiced bun.
Maybe. Our trouble is with blueberries, they don't taste of anything anyway, do they?
I mean, not really, you know.
Beautiful little berries that burst in the mouth.
They're bursts of moisture more than anything else. Yeah,
yeah. I think so. It's really hard to get a decent flavour into a blueberry and a cherry, I think. No, I thought Josh did all right. I think they all did pretty well, to be perfectly honest. But again, 2 hours, 45 minutes to double proof an enriched dough is tight. And they, considering, I thought they did all pretty well, really.
Yeah.
So a good signature challenge. Christy did very, very well. They thought her buns were delicious. Tasha did very well as well. Dan did, you know what, everybody did pretty well. Possibly Matty slightly further down the list. But again, a really good signature challenge. So now we move on to the technical challenge, which, as we've discussed from Dan's fabulous class that we'll be doing for Botanicals Week, was a lemon and thyme drizzle cake with a lemon and thyme syrup and lemon and thyme crystallised decorations. Now, Howard, you have done a lemon drizzle cake with us before. What did you think? Was this a bit easy, do you think, for a technical challenge? Or was this like a deceptively tricky?
No, I thought it was deceptively tricky. I mean, it's always, do you know, I must admit, I've never done a cake in one of those kind of moulds before. I've not lived, have I?
No.
So I need to try that. Because I normally do my lemon drizzle as a loaf, in a loaf tin. Mm. But and I do put some lemon thyme on. Prue was like going mad about this thyme.
She was.
You know, you need to make sure you've got lots of thyme in there. So I don't know how much thyme...
Hour and a half.
She put in there, but...
No.
Yay!
Thank you, Jane. That's a really good point, though, Howard. How much thyme is correct? Because we never really seem to get... You know, some people are putting like, oh, 2 tablespoons, and some people seem to be putting like 3 handfuls in, and it was never really clear. So maybe this is something we can wait for the recipe on the GBBO website.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's just all down to taste, isn't it? But one thing I am with Howard with is the fancy tins. I've got a simple bunt tin, and these sort of branded, heavily detailed bunt tins. I've always wanted one, but they're so prohibitively expensive. I don't know if I'm just a massive cheapskate, but they're so, whenever I look online, they're so expensive. They're about 40, 50 quid, aren't they? Mm. I don't think that's outrageous, or is that just me?
No, they are good. I did try, I very fortunately got sent one about 3 or 4 years ago, which was lovely.
When you're a finalist, I'm sure they send you.
And I must admit, the quality of the tin is brilliant. It transfer. You can send me another one, Nordic Ware, if you want different Christmas ones. But it does conduct the heat really well. And even when you've got those little fins that you'd think would be overbaked, they're not. And it cooks really nicely all the way through. I did, before I had that, buy a silicone one. Oh, and they just don't even bother.
Not
frankly.
The same, they're no.
Not really not the same at all. And you'd think it'd be easy to get the cake out of the tin. It's not. The only thing about that particular design... And you need to wash them carefully once you've used them. If you don't get every little crumb out of the fin, they can stick.
Mm.
So you have to be particularly careful about how you grease them. Flouring them is a good idea, or using this paste that Nancy always uses, which is a mix of oil.
Lining paste, yeah.
Yeah, the lining paste that Nancy... Google it if anybody is interested. Nancy does a very good lining paste, which keeps for ages in the oven fridge. It really is hard to get them out. And I think they all did remarkably well, and they all greased the tins very carefully. And, of course, all the tins would have been brand new. They're worth getting because they make a simple cake look gorgeous, I think. They always gives is always very impressive for just a simple drizzle cake. So, yeah, Howard, maybe Josh will buy you one for Christmas. Josh.
Maybe. We can only hope.
Or maybe if we all just say Nordic Ware enough times, maybe they'll hear us. Like, what, it's like Beetlejuice.
Who makes
Nordic Ware, Nordic Ware, Nordic Ware, Nordic Ware, Nordic Ware. Maybe next week we could be sponsored by them. Who knows? Maybe we'll get a deal out of this. But yes, Jane, speaking of getting things out of the tins, like everybody seemed to do pretty well. And then at the judging, Paul was looking at Dana's. He was like, oh, it's stuck round the side. Did it stick? And Dana was like, I don't know. Bless her. And it was just like right at the bottom that it might have just stuck a tiny bit. But everybody did really well getting them out. So I think that was a bit picky.
I thought everybody did really well. You know, they are tricky. And we've all had, even in the ordinary bunt tins or the simple Savarin tins, sometimes it sticks occasionally and then you just sort of stick it back on and put some icing over the top of it and nobody knows.
No, I don't know.
I thought he was a bit picky about that.
Well, I thought there was a surprising variety considering that they're all using the same tin. One of the things that I did wonder, what exactly happened with Matty and crystallising stuff and that egg white? What was going on?
Oh, God. Well, I think he sort of took the individual leaves off the sprigs of thyme and then sort of mushed that in with the egg white and sugar to make like a paste rather than dipping the whole sprigs in the mixture and then letting them dry out. Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay. But I think Christy did the same as well, because on the close-up of her her technical, it was individual leaves as well. And the edit made Matty look like he was getting it really wrong, but then Christy got really, really high praise for her decoration. So I'm not really sure what happened there.
Yeah.
Maybe she redid hers.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. It looked pretty, didn't it? I know a lot of people. It's not even crystallizing, to be honest.
No.
It's just, it's putting a bit of egg white.
Dusting.
Dusting. Mm. I mean, if you crystallize something, you cook it in sugar and make it edible. None of that would have been edible. It would have been horrible.
It would have been pretty, though. It would have been pretty.
It would have been pretty. Yes, it would have been pretty. Yes, but it wasn't crystallized. It was just.
But I also don't see the point of when you make a cake and you put decoration on it and you have to just remove the decoration and put it to one side. I do generally feel like, just what is the point?
It's, exactly. You know,
I know. That's a bit like edible flowers. Oh, don't give me edible flowers.
No, but it's, you know, like even with dishes, there's Nigella has a fantastic toad in a hole recipe and she puts whole sprigs of thyme on the top of them. And I'm like, it looks very pretty, but then I got to pull sticks out of the top of the thing before I eat it. So I just like, why would I want to do that? Why would I want to do that to a cake? I don't know.
So going off piste briefly, there's but talking about cakes and talking about flowers. There's a real trend for wedding cakes or any cakes where you buy pressed edible flowers and then you stick them all round the outside of a cake so they look as though they're almost like they're growing. But you can buy grasses and flowers, they cost a fortune. You have to pick every one of those off before you eat it.
Oh, no.
Well, do you want to eat a dried cornflower, including its stem? I really don't want to eat that.
No, I don't really know.
And then I costed it out for a friend of mine for a wedding cake for this summer. And, you know, flowers for a three-tier wedding cake would have cost well over £100. And I think you're just going to pick them off and put them in the compost. So, you know, that nice strategically placed rose looks beautiful on a cake, but all these dried and edible flowers, I'm really not a fan at all, I'm afraid.
Or Howard, didn't you do something with borage flowers and they look really pretty because they're like quite a bright blue. So you could have a handful of those on the top.
Did I?
I'm sure one of you did.
Oh, I didn't.
Oh, I don't remember. I don't.
I do grow borage, but that's to use in Pims.
Pims, yeah.
Yeah,
God, I'm sure you sent me a picture of something with borage flowers on it. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe I'm imagining it. It just seems like the sort of thing you do, Howard. Maybe it was somebody else. But yeah, Jane, exactly. Like a handful of edible flowers on the top, maybe, is one thing, but sticking them all the way around, a bit much.
No, I don't. There's decorating. No, I'm not. I've just Googled Howard and borage flowers. Nothing comes up.
No, I'm not surprised. I love the way Sarah says it's the kind of thing I would do, like when I've got a load of laundry to do. No, I'm sorry, I'm sticking some borage flowers on things.
Obviously. It's because you're so artistic, dear.
But it's one of the things, as I said at the start, what exactly is botanicals? What does that mean? Because when I think of Botanicals Week, I think of like perfumey flavours and I think of dried flowers stuck to everything. Like that's the image that I have in my mind. So it was weird that we didn't have more dried flowers, I thought. Maybe that's just, I don't know, that was my preconception that that's what we'd have. But
well, they could have foraged them, couldn't they?
We've got a lot of dried flowers coming up, I think, in the floral dessert.
Oh, in the showstopper. That's true. Okay, fair enough. Okay, point taken.
Well, just on that note, let's talk about the ranking for the technical before we can move on to our showstopper. In seventh place, we had Tasha, who had too much icing. The cake was too dark and the cake was overbaked, but she had good flavour levels between the lemon and thyme. Dana was sixth. Whose edges seemed to have stuck in the cake tin, and it was her cake texture that I think really let her down. But Saku was fifth, Matty was fourth, Dan was third, Josh was second, and Christy was first. She had very neat icing and a good flavour balance. The edit didn't seem to make too much of her cake, but clearly it was very nice and there was nothing to say about it. So Christy doing really, really well so far in the challenge.
Can I just add a little tip if you're going to make a cake in an upside down tin, in effect? If you want the syrup to get all the way through, because it is quite hard, you want to poke too many holes in it at the top, because you're doing it upside down, you can poke some holes in the bottom put some syrup in the bottom and then do some syrup once you've turned it out of the tin as well. So you can do it both ways. Just a little tip if you want your syrup to get all the way down to the bottom, which Paul seemed to like in our series but didn't mention it in the technical.
There you go. Tips and tricks for everybody. So now we move on to the Showstopper Challenge. But before we do that, we do have a couple of questions from our lovely listeners. So thank you, everybody who writes in with your questions. We will try and get through as many as we can. Now, this one, Dan, is just for you.
Oh.
This is from Alison, who says hello to everybody, but she just wanted to write in and share a bread pun for Dan after Bread Week's episode, because you said you wanted one for Henry Cavill. So Alison has thought of one. So are you ready for this, Dan?
I'm ready.
Henry Cavroll.
What?
What is it? Cavroll.
I don't know.
I think it's just a roll.
Yeah. Like a bread roll.
Simple. Yeah.
The genius is in the simplicity of it.
I think so.
Alison says she loves a good pun and she loves the podcast. And she actually took part in the Chocolate Week Dobos Talk class we had. So thank you so much, Alison, for writing in, for listening and for attending our class. So there we go, Dan. You've finally have a Henry Cavill
Cavill pun. Perfect. Perfection. So if I get back in the tent again, I should be making my Henry Cavrolls for my signature, hopefully. Time will tell.
I hope you do.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Now we have another question here from Katie in Kentucky, who says, I'm obsessed with the Bake Off and recently found this lovely podcast, which I play often. So thank you very much for listening. I love this podcast. It's incredibly hard not to listen to the newest podcast before we get the newest GBBO episode here in the States. My question is, were there ever moments on your season where a contestant just unraveled? It seems like quite the pressure cooker atmosphere. So has anyone ever just completely lost it? Howard, do you want to start us off on that one?
I think Jane is the one out of us who I don't think you did unravel, did you, Jane? Or did you?
I don't think I did.
No,
I don't think I did.
But I think both Dan and I probably did at some point. But yes, I think it's always difficult, isn't it? Because we do see and in this week we've seen someone who's really on the edge, struggling with the whole Bake Off experience. But I think there's two things. One, you get the examples where actually someone is having a really, really bad time and then things turn out okay and that's absolutely great. So it's got a happy ending.
Yeah.
But I think occasionally there will be times when people have an awful experience. And I think hopefully those don't always make it into the final edit, because sometimes people are just in such an awful place that you don't actually want that to be shown on TV.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, there are things that actually the public don't want to see. They don't want to see somebody having a complete mental collapse. That's not entertainment. And I know that in the week that I went home, I really did have a nightmare and I really was very unhappy. And they edited it very kindly, actually. They really kind of glossed over me at my most horrific and just tried to make, present a reasonably positive image. So thank you very much to the Love Productions team. But no, I think it's quite common that people, well, you know, a lot of the people who go home, they go home because it starts off going wrong and then they just can't pull themselves back together again. They can't pull it back together. And as I say, nobody wants to watch that, you know, no matter how cruel the reality TV audiences are from time to time. You don't actually want to see somebody having a breakdown. That's not charming, is it? So I think they disguise that quite well. But yeah, are there tears in the tent? Oh my God, yes. Are people sort of having panic attacks over nothing? Absolutely, yes. But I think we keep that to a minimum for the audience. Make sure it's a pleasant and uplifting story and not one of their despair.
You know what? I don't think we have much of that. I did say at the beginning that we had a few tears in Botanicals Week, but only, I think, because we were really, really tired. I don't remember anybody having a complete meltdown in my series at all. Paul wasn't very happy a lot of the time, so he had a meltdown because we were laughing too much. But other than that, we were incredibly fortunate, I think. We're all sort of...
Well, I wonder, Jane, whether you are naturally a calming influence, no, right? Or whether you just went round and told people to pull themselves together.
Probably that one, yeah.
Actually, I did tell somebody at golf to pull themselves together last week, so maybe
the truth comes out. I see.
Counselling would not be a good second career for me, but I just thought we all got on with it, really. I think it depends. I don't think anybody had a real disaster. Poor old Val had a real disaster the week she went out, and her biscuit week, where it looked more like the Planet of the Apes than New York City. She just seemed to laugh her way through, bless her, because she was so gorgeous. So, I don't know, maybe we were just very lucky.
Well, thank you, Katie, for your question there. And we have time to squeeze in one more. This is from Jerry in Utah. And Jerry says, I have loved each of your seasons, you three, of Bake Off, and your podcast is such a fun addition to my week as I wait for the new episode. You guys are very kind with all your comments about the podcast. This is very nice to hear. And Dan, especially when you called your kids to tell them you'd won Star Baker and your little one said, was it very good and very tasty, was one of the sweetest moments of all Bake Off. So that's lovely. But Jerry's question here is, when Amos left in week one, he said that when he heard his name, he just came out of his body. That description felt so relatable. What were your last moments in the tent like, and how did you feel when you knew it had come to an end?
My last moments in the tent, I think I was just devastated, not because I was going home, but because I'd just done such a terrible job that week. I think whenever we go home, you go into the competition knowing you're going to go home, but you don't know that you're going to do a terrible job, if you like. So I did feel a little bit bad, but to be honest, a little part of me was quite relieved because I didn't think I could pick myself up and do it all again the following week. I was just absolutely at the end of my tether. So I devastated on one hand, but on the other, kind of thank God it's over in a way. So I don't know. Did you relate to that, Howard?
I did, yeah. So I remember, I think it had been an awful, awful day weather-wise, as far as I can remember. And then as we were all sitting on the stools waiting for the announcement, the sun came out and I just thought, you know, I'm just so, so tired. This part of me thinks I just want them to say my name, and then they did. So, and after that, and I don't normally cry, but I did burst into tears after that, which is really, really unusual for me. But I think it is partly the fact, partly a bit of relief, and also partly just sadness that what I thought was then the end of a wonderful experience, whereas in actual fact, there's lots of things that come on after that, including Bake with a Legend and the Breakdown podcast.
Yeah, we're still talking about it all these years
still
later.
Here. So yeah.
What about you, Jane?
Well, my experience was a bit. Well, it was.
Right, here we go.
It was a bit different.
Yeah.
Go on, Jane. Tell us what it's like to make it all the way.
Well, it is lovely to make it all the way, and I knew Candice had won because there's a lot of stuff that you don't see, and because they want to maintain the suspense, don't they? I knew as soon as my chocolate collar didn't work that I wasn't going to win. Andrew, we kind of knew, wasn't going to win. So it was between Candice and I. But to get all the way to the end is lovely because you don't miss out, really. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The thing I think we were told, and I'm sure I said this on the podcast before, after week five, Mel and Sue said, right, guys, you just really need to brace up now because it is now stamina. Mm-hmm. And it's whoever manages to keep it going will get to the final. And it's true, you could see people flag. You could see people tired that were just like, oh, do you know what? I really don't care now, particularly. I just can't do this anymore. And I think for me, because I was self-employed, I didn't have to juggle the same sort of work pressures that other people did. You know, taking odd days off midweek to and keep it quiet. It was very easy for me to keep it quiet and very easy for me to work my timetable around the bake-off schedule. And I think that really helped as well. Mm. Everybody looks at the pressure in the tent, but actually it is the pressure of juggling your life outside of the tent as well that's so difficult. My children were a bit older. My husband was working from home, so he was very supportive. And I was self-employed. You know, I had a much easier ride than an awful lot of them did. And I think that made the difference, to be honest. But yeah, it was lovely to get to the final. Absolutely lovely. I just wish I'd won. Maybe I'd have been on Strictly Come Dancing, if that had been the case, or Dancing on Ice.
Is that your real dream?
I'd love to be on Strictly, wouldn't you?
But is that why you did all of this?
Cool.
You only went on Bake Off to get on Strictly.
No,
now it comes
not
out.
Well, Jerry, Katie and Alison, thank you so much, guys, for your questions and your puns and all your massive love for the podcast, which is just so, so lovely to hear. And we have so many amazing questions we're going to get through in this podcast. Thank you all for writing in. And if anybody wants to submit any more questions, then please do. You can email us at thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com. Or you can contact us on social media. We are at Bake With A Legend on all platforms. So we move on to the Showstopper Challenge, which this week in Botanicals Week, as we have discussed, was a floral dessert. So here we go with the flowers. We've had the spices, we've had the herbs. And now we're moving on to the flowers. A floral dessert that must include a significant part of it must be a baked element. And flowers not only in flavour, but in decoration as well. Now, this was a 4.5 hour challenge. Now, flowers in a bake. I think, Dan, you mentioned rose is something that could definitely be used. What other flowers spring to mind when we start to think about baking with flowers?
Hibiscus. So really, the ones that I use tend to be just rose and hibiscus. Those are the only flowers that I can think of, apart from maybe lavender. But that's like, it's pretty rare to use lavender because it is such a strong and specific flavor.
You've used elderflower, haven't you?
Oh, only as a cordial. Yeah. Mm. But everyone seemed to have pretty much the same idea. So it's rose, hibiscus, which I do use, and then elderflower. And then no one, I don't think anyone used lavender, did they? Did they?
No.
So what else can be used? I don't know. Do you know anything, Howard?
Well, I've not used, but I have tried meadow sweet before.
Oh, really?
I've had cake with meadow sweet, which is actually
never
quite
even
nice.
Heard of it. Didn't even know the word until yesterday.
I've never had a dandelion jelly pond before, but not sure I want one.
I've had a dandelion and burdock.
Yeah.
I don't know what burdock is, actually.
Oh, you could use that, couldn't you? I don't know what burdock is, but
what
actually
is burdock?
You could do a nardia and reduce that
burdock's
down,
a root,
couldn't
isn't
you?
It, I think.
Is it?
Burdock is, yes. Burdock is, I think it's a root of a plant. And yes, Jane, absolutely, you can do what Nadia did and could reduce a dandelion and burdock drink down to a syrup and then use that. That would give a punchy flavour, yeah.
Mm.
I was looking this up and there aren't that many more flowers that I can see that would have lent themselves to sweet bakes. There were a lot of things like nasturtium flowers and things like that that would lend sort of a peppery, savoury taste that tend to be quite good in things like salads and stir fries. The only thing I could really think of, and I think I did write this down, was bergamot that really could have been used a bit more.
Yeah.
I know Saku did an Earl Grey cheesecake, which I think was the point there. And again, lavender, which we've mentioned, or maybe jasmine. But again, these are getting quite like cosmetic flavours and it doesn't sound that appetising. Chamomile,
but
there you go.
Bergamot's actually a fruit, isn't it? So
it's an orange thing, isn't it? But the flowers you can
use. You could use the flowers.
Use bergamot
flower, yes. Yeah.
But it is like an orange.
Unless it's very Earl Grey-like. Yes, you're right.
Yes.
I think they use bergamot for that.
Well, Earl Grey has
chamomile.
Lavender,
I'm surprised
isn't
nobody
it?
Used chamomile.
I love chamomile tea, actually.
Mm.
That could have been lovely.
I've used rose hip as well. You know, like rose hip syrup.
Nice. I can't remember what it tastes like. Does it taste of rose or is it a different flavour altogether?
No.
No, it's
a different flavour. It is a different flavour. It's sweet and sort of slightly fragrant, fruity. Or
so when you use hibiscus, Dan, I have got some dried hibiscus downstairs and we've only ever had it in tea. What do you do with it to flavour your cake?
I tend to soak it, to boil it in a syrup, and then that gets the flavour out of the flour, and then you use the syrup in other things. Yeah,
it's not a very distinctive flavour, is it?
You'd be surprised. It's a little bit like it's sort of sharp and sweet. Well, the sugar is probably what's making it sweet. It's kind of sharp and tart, a little bit like cranberries, I would say.
Oh, okay.
It's sort of a bit,
I'll give it a go.
Give it a good boil to get the flavour out of it, and it's got the sort of the sharp. Tartness. Yeah, it's pleasant. And you get a lovely colour out of the flowers as well.
Mm. Okay, I'm going to, yes, I will. I've got a bag of it downstairs. I've only had it as tea, which is quite pleasant as well if you're trying to avoid caffeine at the end of the day.
So elderflower and hibiscus really were the main flavours. I think everybody used either one or both of them. Dan used dandelion, as we've mentioned, and meadowsweet. I'm not entirely sure we got a lot of what the judges thought. I mean, they thought it was quite perfumed and quite botanical, but they didn't seem to dislike it. So what did you think of Dan's there?
I think Paul had originally said it smelt like cat's pee, which
the plant does. Yeah,
didn't end up tasting like that. Again, back to foraging in London, I think.
Yes, I thought Prue's comeback was very quick. I quite enjoyed that. She said... says something like, "Oh, I'm impressed that you guys know what cat pee tastes like."
But if you've had cats and have smelt meadow sweet, you know exactly what they're talking about. It's a very stinky plant for some reason. It's really, really bizarre. Yeah, it's very strange. But yes, that seemed to taste quite nice. And Howard, you said you've had that in a bake before. Is that a nice thing to use?
It is slightly, it's got that kind of green taste to it, that sort of, I think that somebody said slightly grassy. But yeah, I think it's pleasant.
Lovely.
You don't sound very convincing, Howard. Yes, it's lovely.
Oh,
it's,
to be honest, I had it quite a few years ago somewhere in Scandinavia, and now I can't actually remember. I remember at the time thinking, this is really nice, but being able to pinpoint exactly what it tasted like,
Okay, fair enough.
We'll have to get you some more meadowsweet, Howard. You can do some more baking with it.
I need to try it again, yeah.
What did we think of Tasha's? I think we need to talk about Tasha's. That was quite a spectacle that she had. She had 10 layers to bake. We had Palais Breton biscuit, we had Bavoise sponges, ruby chocolate mousse, elderflower and hibiscus flavours all the way through there, and a Genoese cake colour and jelly art. I mean, I'm exhausted just saying that. What did we think of hers?
It was a lot. It was a lot of work.
That's a very articulate comment there, Dan. It was a lot. I thought it was very ambitious, and she did incredibly well to pull it off, didn't she? I mean, we always say you should pare back your bake so you make sure you finish it in time. But goodness me, you know, she did set herself a huge challenge, But 4.5 hours, you can get a lot done in 4.5 hours. You know, we moan about how little time they have in bread, whenever they have to make bread, but that's because they do a lot of sitting around. I mean, I imagine she used every single second of her 4.5 hours, and oh, it looks stunning. Didn't she do a great job?
She did an excellent job. It was very nice. The cake collar and the jelly art on top as well. Very, very lovely. I think the only thing she did drop one of her cakes, which was a very sort of scary moment. But she did say it was her emergency spare cake,
yes,
her spare one.
Yeah.
So it wasn't too bad. But then to do jelly art, how is everybody just like, oh, yeah, I'll just do some jelly art on the top. I'm like, hold on, that's going to take 4.5 hours on its own. Goodness me.
I've never attempted jelly art. I've got the kit downstairs. My husband keeps nicking the syringes to inject something into his boat.
I wondered what you were going to say then.
No, when you have to measure some of these epoxy resin things. He I think he's nicked them all. So I've now got the ends, but I haven't got the... Anyway, just thought I'd share that with you. I've never had the desire to try jelly art, as gorgeous as it looks.
Well, the thing is about the jelly art, actually, is that you make the clear jelly and you have a long time for it to set, and then you can do the design sort of the last few minutes. So actually, it looks like it's quite intense in terms of work, it's actually not. It's just make a clear jelly, come back when it's completely set, and then do something right at the end. But it is high risk, because obviously if you mess it up, you then don't really leave any options. There's no time to remake the jelly, is there? So it's a one-shot thing. You really only get one shot at making it. And I, in the similar boat as you, Jane, I have bought the jelly kit off wherever it was, somewhere online, and never quite got around to trying it for myself. So maybe one day. On a rainy day, we'll do it together.
Oh, all right. Yeah, well, shall we? Okay. I'll send you a link, and we'll make jelly art together.
We'll do it over Zoom.
Yes, we're good at doing things over Zoom. What are your views on ruby chocolate? Is it style
not chocolate
substance? It's quite pretty, and they say, well, I didn't think they mentioned it this time, but little raspberry hints to it. But is it worth going to all the effort and the expense? Because ruby chocolate's expensive.
I don't think I've ever tried it.
Really?
It's
not that special. Yeah. So when it first came out, they were sort of marketing it as the new chocolate, the new fourth type of chocolate. But I don't think it's interesting or distinctive enough to really be its own thing. It's too similar to just white chocolate with a little bit of like darker notes in it for my taste. And, you know, very much like in the film Mean Girls, I'm like, stop trying to make ruby chocolate happen. It's not going to happen.
It's pretty cool, though. It is a pretty colour.
It's pretty. It's pretty.
It's a pretty colour. So I suppose if you're going for the pretty colour, that's fine. But just thought I'd ask, because Tash's mousse was ruby chocolate. Mm.
It was, and that was another sort of fruity flavour, which then added to the hibiscus and elderflower. So I think that's quite a good move, just to add that in. Christy, bless her, she really struggled, but I think she came out with something that actually looked really... like a piece of art. It was really simple but beautiful. But she did struggle with that white chocolate ganache on the outside. But she had a lemon elderflower Genoese, a creme diplomat of indeterminate flavour. Well, not that I heard anyway. A strawberry elderflower jelly and a rhubarb basil jelly. So she had some nice botanical flavours in there. What did we think?
I'm not quite sure what happened to Christy, because if she had time to remake the outside of that dessert, why did she turn it out so early? I don't quite understand what happened. And I think that was a severe case of, you know, a bake-off getting to you, because she was all in tears, bless her. But then she had time enough to make it again. So I'm not quite sure if there was something I wasn't following there. Do you know what I mean?
I didn't know whether she was intending to do some more decoration on the outside or something once it had been turned out. But
right.
Yeah, you're right. She seemed to have plenty of time. I know she was dreadfully, dreadfully upset. I think she would have been more upset had she had to face Jane, because at one point I think she was contemplating cutting the silicone mold.
Not again!
No, don't do it. Don't do it, Christy.
I have got another mold and I have got 6 exclamation marks up against it from my notes.
No.
Yes. Oh, no. That would have been... so expensive as well. You talk about the Buntins, but these fancy molds are really expensive as well. I'm not sure how you're supposed to turn it out of that mold, to be perfectly honest. Generally, you freeze it, don't you?
Freeze. Yeah, it's got to be completely frozen.
It's got to be frozen to get them out. And it's usually, they're quite solid as well. So I think she was trying to do something that maybe the mold wasn't designed to. We didn't talk about it, I don't think, last week. Well, whenever the chocolate week was. But when she was trying to use a mold to make her chocolate shapes.
Yeah.
You know, some of these molds are not designed for what Christy, I think, has been trying to use them for. I was looking at one of my molds yesterday and thinking, oh, I need to make a chocolate decoration. Just pipe it. Don't stick it in some of these little shallow molds, because you'll not get them out. Which, again, Christy, I think, was trying to make her life easier, because these molds can make your life easier, but it ended up just making it a lot more difficult. So I did feel for her. She was terribly upset. And all credit to her, starting again and scooping it out and trying to make it work, because the layers did look a little bit mess after she'd done that. But, you know, she could have just thrown her toys out of the pram, stuffed it in the bin and walked out of the tent. And she didn't. She kept going and put something that looked very pretty on a plate at the end. So all credit to Christy, and I applaud her for actually coming through it. I think she made the wrong choices at the beginning using that mould, but she came through it, and well done, Christy.
She did. She really brought that back together. Dana did something quite interesting as well. She had a rose bavois, a rose and white chocolate mousse, hibiscus jelly and a coconut sponge, all of which sounds fantastic. I'm not convinced that the bake itself was particularly all that fantastic. The sponge wasn't great and the floral taste didn't really come through. But I imagine you'll all have something to say about, especially Jane, about dried flowers and isomalt to make a box. Going to be the tastiest thing.
Well, I don't think it was designed to be eaten. And I think that's very different from sticking dried flowers on the side of your cake, which is designed to be eaten.
Fair enough.
So I think some people make isomalt lollies, don't they, and put a flower in it. I wouldn't do that, because I wouldn't want to be eating a isomalt lolly, which is just sugar, isn't it? It's not particularly pleasant.
It's not even nice sugar.
However, it did look very pretty, but I think had I been Dana, I would have concentrated more on my cake than my box.
Yeah. Why did she make a box?
Oh, I don't know.
With the best will in the world, it's not to be eaten, so why bother making it?
We get stuck, don't we? We see a brief and then you're flicking through Instagram or Pinterest or whatever you're doing, and you go, oh, that's pretty, I could make a box. And then you get completely fixated, and what you really need to do is go, no, stop, reset, let me start again.
Yes.
None of us do. So she clearly thought this box was going to be brilliant, and I thought it was all right.
It did look amazing, very pretty, but it seemed extra and unnecessary.
So what I would do, I wouldn't have made a box, and if you're going to stick dried flowers in anything, stick it in an ice cube or an ice bowl and use that to serve and wow your guests. Stick it in an ice cube and your borage flowers finally melt, which is lovely. Don't make an isomalt box. It costs you a fortune and everybody...
Yes, it's not cheap isomalt, is it?
No.
It's not. Isomalt's not cheap.
Do you know who disappointed me the most, though?
Oh, no. Wasn't me, was it, again?
No, not this week, Jane. Saku. I felt so bad for Saku because I thought that the jelly work was beautiful and the judges certainly agreed. Her flower was amazing. I thought it was in a nice rounded shape. It reminded me very much of Ermine's from whenever that was, a couple of years ago now. It was a beautiful big flower. It looked lovely. The layers looked pretty nice. But they just said it had no flavour. And I just think that's sort of devastating as a baker. I've had that feedback once in the tent where they were just like, I can't really taste anything. And that's just devastating, isn't it? That's nothing you ever want to hear. So poor Saku, if anything, she's normally a bit strong on her flavours. So frustrating for Saku, but thankfully she escaped too much punishment this week.
I think that's the difficulty, isn't it, with quite a few of these desserts. I think when you do an impressive dessert, it's like a bit like a wedding cake or something like that. It can have the wow factor, but does it actually make your mouth water? Do you think, ooh, that looks really delicious? Or is it just that it's quite impressive?
Yeah, it's a spectacle, definitely. When you are making those jelly flowers, you're definitely making them for the spectacle rather than because they taste delicious. So yeah, I'd absolutely agree with that. But it's just, I'm just ashamed for Saku because I love her and I want her to stick around for as long as possible. But it's weird that her flavours let her down this week. It's a shame.
Oh, no, she said, was it at one point this week when she said, look at this face. This is the last time you will see this face.
Well, fortunately for her, it wasn't. So,
but talking of jelly flowers, what about Josh?
Yeah, Josh is annoying. I think they all did a good job with their jellies, their jelly flowers. I thought it was ambitious, but I thought it was lovely. It's a good opportunity to use them, and I thought Josh's was very nice.
It looked really good, didn't it? As this was a sort of a Charlotte Russe inspired bake here with obviously the jelly on the top, and then we had the bavois in the middle and the ladyfinger type cakes around the outside, and it was just raspberry, rhubarb and hibiscus. So not going bonkers on the flowers, but then obviously keeping hibiscus at the heart of it. And apart from the little split on the outside, it was beautiful, apparently well set layers, spot on flavours and excellent textures. So he really couldn't have done any better.
No, he couldn't. No.
Well, Prue said it just needed a ribbon.
That's true.
Presumably to hold those fingers in place.
It just needed a pair of Spanx.
Shapewear for cakes. Cakeware.
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
Fantastic.
Can I just? I just want to say something about elderflower, if I may, because we've done a lot of talking about a lot of people used elderflower. When we were in the tent, we were not allowed to use elderflower to decorate any of our bakes. We could use it in a flavouring because elderflower is poisonous unless cooked. So it's fine, obviously.
Oh, okay.
Apparently. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't think
Do you remember Howard wanted to do Poison Week?
Yes!
Poison Week!
Why?
A callback to last series.
Never picked up Poison Week.
I'm sure some of you will be laughing at the Poison Week episode. I think it was last year. Please feel free to go back and listen to Poison Week.
Matty. let's talk about Matty. Can we talk about Matty? What was he talking about? Elderflower and blackberry being a masculine drink. Was he... he wasn't being serious, was he? I mean, sorry.
I assume
he was joking.
Yeah, I'm assuming he was joking. It didn't sound very masculine to me, but how would I know?
You have a very narrow view of masculinity, Jane. I'm shocked and appalled, you dinosaur.
Then we've seen a lot of Cremos. Is that how you pronounce it? Cremos, this series already. And I think if he was criticised for not quite meeting the botanical brief, because I think he's got a bit of elderflower in there. Otherwise, he'd got a lemon Cremo. Maybe it should have been an elderflower Cremo. And a blackberry mousse and a blackberry mirror glaze. So maybe not enough floral flavours in there. What do we think?
Yeah, I think you're right. You're probably right.
I feel like the blackberry would probably be very overwhelming because it is quite a tart and strong flavour. Very nice, very, very nice. And the lemon as well. I really don't think elderflower is going to punch through all that blackberry and lemon.
No, maybe right.
Elderflower, no. Even like when you put elderflower with lemon, you have to put in a ton of elderflower to make it register. So, I think it would have definitely struggled in there. But I think possibly one of the most damning criticisms you could ever hope to get from a showstopper is it's not a showstopper, is it?
It did look a bit of a mess.
His heart must have sunk, you know. But also, I think, listen, as someone who learned to make buttercream flowers in my time, they did look, and oh, this sounds so cruel, but they look like someone who just learned how to make buttercream flowers. And there's, you know, they look like flowers from the top, but not from the sides. And they did just look like a bunch of little, like, as I think they were described, as like a bunch of soldiers. And yeah, they need to like sit on a pile of something to make them look like they're three-dimensional rather than just flat, you know, just from the top looking like flowers. So that was, I don't think it added to the beauty to have them in that way, which was unfortunate for Matty. But it's one of those things where I dare say it probably tasted very delicious, but it didn't really match exactly what the judges were looking for, and it wasn't the most beautiful. So not the best outing for Matty, sadly.
No, I thought he was teetering on the edge. Agreed. Myself.
Should we end on that somber note?
Yes. On the, well, not too somber for Matty, but yes, we do have to say goodbye to one of the bakers this week. But let's talk about Star Baker first. And finally, it was Josh's turn for Star Baker. He's missed out on Star Baker at least twice, I think three times. He's been the bridesmaid, but not the bride. But finally, he got his Star Baker with an almost perfect Charlotte Russe. Some very nice blueberry and lemon signature buns, and coming second in the technical. So he did very, very, very well. Howard, what do we think about Josh getting Star Baker?
Oh, yeah, at last. Yes, I think it was well deserved. And although Christy had gone in up until the showstopper looking very, very strong, I don't think Josh actually melted her ganache deliberately.
He's going around with a blowtorch.
No sabotage. No, it was fair and square. Yeah.
And yes, but that also means we have to say goodbye to somebody. And unfortunately, this week it was poor Dana. She had a reasonably good signature. Maybe again, she didn't quite get the spices in there. She came, what was it, second to last? Yep, sixth in the technical. And her showstopper, although the box was very pretty and the cake actually was quite pretty as well, just the cake just wasn't there for taste. So unfortunately, it is the end of Dana. Dan, are we sad to say goodbye to Dana?
Yeah, of course we are. I think, you know, we're sad to say goodbye to anyone who's a good baker, who's got a fun personality. And I think Dana really tripped up this week just on sort of the specifics of the brief. I don't think she really delivered the botanical flavours. I think, you know, like her cake was perfectly lovely. It was nicely decorated. You know, there were good technical elements, but I think she just fell a little bit short in terms of hitting the requirements specifically of Botanicals Week. She's a very good baker and, you know, it'll be a shame to see her go. I particularly like some of her decoration, thought she was very creative, but I'm sure we haven't seen the last of Dana, have we? Because we know that all the best people go out in week six, don't they?
Do they? Well, okay.
Well, before the children start fighting again, we'll wrap up there. Thank you so much, Jane, Dan and Howard, for joining us this week for Botanicals Week. And don't forget, if you want to sign up to our botanicals class with Dan on Sunday the 5th of November, baking his fantastic lemon and thyme Chelsea buns with rose and pistachio fudge, then please do join Dan and our lovely host Emily on Sunday the 5th of November for that class. Don't forget to sign up. You can also use the code PODCAST for 10% off your next booking. And don't forget to send in all your questions. But until next time, thank you everybody for listening. Jane, Dan and Howard, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.